Once upon a time, all we have to do is hear these four words, and regardless of how old or how young we are, something in our brains and hopefully in our hearts knows that it's story time. And thank you so much for that story today. That was perfect. Stories are the integral way that we pass on information about ourselves, about our culture, about our society, about the times in which we live. Stories have the power to bind people together and to inspire individuals to value cooperation over competition. For many of us in this nation, this past year seems like one very long story of event after event after event that led to increasing division, strife, violence, hatred, and groups pitted against one another from different classes, different races, different religions, different nationalities, and different backgrounds of every kind. Many writers and journalists have attempted to convey the sense of tension and fear that seems so prevalent across our land, and way too often causes individuals and groups to create false stories that justify them doing things they would not, hopefully, have done otherwise. There have been moments of despair for many of us over this past year, especially those of us who have been active in attempting to create a different story. Many of us have wanted to give up time after time. Dr. Martin Luther King once said that it is only in the darkness that you can see the stars. In one of the dark moments I experienced this fall, when I felt like it was ridiculous to keep working so hard to make a difference in what was happening in our nation, I received a call inviting me to an organizational meeting about the new Poor People's Campaign that's being mobilized by Reverend Dr. William Barber all across our nation. Some of you are shaking your heads, and I know that there were many Unitarians at some of those meetings. Reverend Barber is creating a national movement to take up where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. left off when he was assassinated. This is going to be a 40-day national campaign with groups all across our country facing the most important issues that we are still attempting to address, from racism to the degradation of our environment, from poverty to the general moral malaise that is affecting so much of our nation. Two central features of this movement include, first, a focus on the real life stories of people who are suffering because of these issues. And second, upon the power of our singing together. I've been to Reverend Barber's events in the past. I've been on stage with him, where I've witnessed the impact of using both music and story to motivate, to energize, and perhaps most importantly, to unify groups of people who did not know each other before entering that room, mainly because they came from different racial, religious, economic, educational backgrounds, not to mention every possible sexual orientation. I believe that Dr. Barber has not only reignited Dr. King's vision of the beloved community, but he has expanded it to include groups that King tried so hard to include, but was not able to do in a public manner. I believe this movement will help us collectively, despite everything else that's happening in our nation, to begin to write a new, once upon a time story. that will be so crucial for us resuming our journey toward freedom that was modeled so effectively yesterday in the Women's March and also in the MLK Gala last night. Dr. Barbara is reclaiming methods that we need to realize, however, methods that were used in the abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad, and thank you again, Aaron, for using those, using both stories and spirituals to make new freedom possible. Slave owners then didn't have much of a clue about what was going on with this music and these stories. And my hunch is that the powers in our nation today may not have much understanding of what's being prepared as well, or much clue about what is coming. Because spirituals were taught and learned at that time as part of an oral tradition rather than a written tradition. Again, as Aaron said, the definitive history of many and most of these songs has been lost over the years. But there's so many scholars who believe now that slaves took biblical stories about freedom and justice that they heard in church services they attended not by choice, but because their slave masters made them attend. Now, it's understood that they did not listen to many of the sermons, but something about many of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures caught them. They caught their imagination, because so many of the scriptures speak about freedom and justice and the hope for a better land. And these slaves internalized these stories, and then they recreated them with lyrics that were truly soul-filled music about liberation. Because slaves were so often sold from one plantation to another plantation, often cruelly separating families. The good thing that came out of this is that these spirituals spread over large periods of land. And many, many, many people knew the same spirituals. And so they were able to become part of a covert system of communication, like the drinking gourd and quilts and many other things. And they were used to communicate the desire and the facilitation of times when slaves could escape from slavery to freedom. Frederick Douglass, who you also mentioned, a 19th century abolitionist author and former slave himself, wrote in his book, My Bondage and My Freedom, he said a keen observer might have detected in our repeated singing of O Canaan, sweet Canaan, I am bound for the land of Canaan, something more than a hope of reaching heaven. We meant to reach the north, and the north was heaven. To provide an example of how these scriptures were transformed into tools of liberation, allow me to tell a bit of just one of those stories that slaves internalized. It comes from the Exodus story. The great prophetic leader Moses from the Hebrew tradition, who had been raised with every privilege in the Pharaoh's house and palace in Egypt, where his own Jewish people became enslaved over a period of generations. Moses was forced to be out amongst the slave masters who were so cruel to his own people, and he still knew that they were his people. And one day he became so angry that he killed one of those slave masters and thus was forced to flee Egypt and go back to the other land. He married a woman there and ended up herding the sheep of his father-in-law. One day out in the midst of the desert, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrew people, spoke to Moses through a burning bush. God said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a land of good, broad, and flowing, a land filled with milk and honey." Listen to how they sang it. Rituals like this were used as a rallying call to escape to freedom, while again, white slave masters were at first oblivious to how they were being used and thought they were so innocent. This is not a history lesson, however. I'm trying to connect it to what is happening today. On Tuesday of this past week, 86 Jewish rabbis and faith leaders marched down the sidewalks of Washington, up the steps and into the Capitol, into the rotunda, singing this song and other spirituals from their faith tradition, some in Hebrew and some in English. The Jews are a people who have known and experienced oppression and prejudice and injustice from the days of their captivity in Egypt down to the present day. In the United States, hundreds of synagogues and temples have been vandalized just this past year, creating a new sense of fear within our Jewish brothers and sisters. As these Jewish faith leaders on Tuesday continued singing, they sat down in the middle of the rotunda of the Capitol, and they rolled out a long, thin piece of red carpet, obviously symbolizing the Red Sea from the Exodus story. But the words were slightly different. Rather than saying, "Let my people go," as Moses said to the Pharaoh, their banner said, "Let my people stay." Speaking from their own biblical tradition of power to Congress, not Pharaoh, their banner also included the words, "Liberation, not deportation." One of their leaders explained that they would remain there in the rotunda until a Dreamer Act was passed by Congress, ensuring that more than 800,000, what is estimated now is over a million DACA young people, would be able to stay in this country rather than being arrested and detained and sent back to their own countries of origin, about which they know very little, and which may be quite dangerous for many, many of them. Obviously, these Jewish faith leaders were breaking the law, and they knew it. And they continued to sing as officers warned them three times to leave. Then one by one, they began to stand up peacefully and extend their hands behind their backs so they could be handcuffed and led away to jail. The incredible thing and almost eerie part of what happened that day was that they continued singing even till when the last person was arrested, and you could hear that sound echoing through the halls of Congress as they were taken away to jail. One of my sheroes from the Underground Railroad, not heroes, but sheroes, was Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman was an escaped slave herself, and she was known as the Moses of her people. Over the course of 10 years, an enormous personal risk, she personally led hundreds of slaves to freedom. One of the songs Tubman often used to send out the word that the night had come for an escape was steal away to Jesus. Imagine what a man or a woman lying there in his or her bunk in those slave quarters must have felt as the haunting sounds of the spiritual began to echo from nearby cabins and across plantations. To go or not to go? Close your eyes and allow yourself to feel this question as you listen.
God long to stay. Green trees are bending, poor sinners stand a-trembling. The trumpet sounds within my soul. I ain't got long to stay here.
There were times when some slaves decided to make their escape. But after doing so, as they would be going along their way, they would hear the barking of hounds or the shots of guns, and they would be tempted to turn back. At such times, however, if Harriet Tubman was with them, she would convince them at the end of the barrel of her own shotgun to live north or die here. And all slaves knew how serious she was. The words from the spiritual Old Freedom, which begin, before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave, were so serious. Because Tubman knew that any escaping slave that was caught, there were no limits to the torture that would be inflicted upon them that might expose the entire Underground Railroad. And she was not going to let that happen. As you listen to Old Freedom, consider the effects that this song would have had. Necessary part in this journey from the South toward freedom. Every verse in the spiritual Wade in the Water was used again as a covert method to help escaping slaves know what they needed to experience. Of the actual Jordan River being chilly and cold may have been a stretch of the imagination, but everyone knew that the Ohio River was always cold, especially in the midst of the winter when most of it was frozen, at least into chunks. But actually getting to the Ohio River was precarious. It was as precarious as crossing it. The next verse of this song was used to signal slaves who approached the river whether it was safe to stand up and run full force or whether they should fall on the ground and lie still, freezing, or crawl their way to the river because hunters and dogs were close.
Sometimes I'm better to the ground. God's gonna trouble the water.
The book Uncle Tom's Cabin that was published by Harriet Beecher Stowe in 1909 helped me understand a tiny bit about the courage required for runaway slaves to indeed wade out into those waters of the Ohio River. Eliza Harris, who was a heroine of this story, carried her own baby child in her arms as she did this. Listen to Stowe's words. Nerved with strength such as God only can give, the desperate one, with one cry, flying and leaping and vaulting sheer over the turbid current by the shore, on to the raft of ice beyond. It was a desperate leap, anything impossible to anything but madness or despair. The huge green fragment of ice on which she alighted pitched and creaked as her weight came on, but she stayed there not a moment. With wild cries and desperate energy, she leaped to another and still another cake of ice, stumbling and falling at times, leaping, slipping, springing upward and back again. Her shoes were gone, her stockings were cut from her feet, and the blood flowed, showing every mark she made. But she felt nothing. She did nothing. She saw nothing until, simply as in a dream, she saw a man on the other side of the Ohio River, much like the woman you described. And that man stood there with his hand out to help her climb up the bank toward freedom. Our nation has been celebrating and remembering the 89th birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King this past week. He was a man who had the courage to wade out into the icy waters of prejudice and racism and violence, to lead his own people and to lead us as a nation one more step down the road of freedom. Dr. King said, "We do this knowing that history is long. It's a long and tragic story of the fact," and listen to this, especially my white friends, "it is a long and tragic story of the fact that privileged people seldom give up their privileges voluntarily. Therefore, every step toward the goal of justice has always and will always require sacrifice, suffering, and struggle, as well as the tireless exertion and passionate concern of dedicated individuals who know that none of us will ever be truly free until all of us are free." Amen. Our closing hymn.